The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Welcome to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG or KPCG.fm. I'm Brent Nachtigall, Middle East correspondent for thetrumpet.com, and we're coming to you today from Jerusalem, Israel, where Israelis continue to reel from the American administration's failure to veto an anti-settlement resolution at the United Nations on Friday. No doubt many of you are aware of this. You heard probably Stephen Fleury's program yesterday on the topic. If you didn't, go back and listen to that for some background. Today, we're going to look even deeper into that same topic and specifically at whether the United States itself actually drove this resolution against Israel at the UN. Now, if you want some more details, just briefly, this resolution on Friday decreed that all settlement activity in Judea and Samaria, known commonly as the West Bank, that includes East Jerusalem, that includes parts of the Old City as well, This resolution declared them illegitimate and illegal. Now, there are many people that think this deal can be undone or that it can just be washed away, this resolution, when Mr. Trump comes into office. Well, that's not true. This resolution is here to stay, barring absolute miracles. This is what Ben Rhodes had to say about that. He's the Deputy National Security Advisor for Strategic Communications. You no doubt have heard about him. He works for Mr. Obama directly. He had this to say on Channel 2, Israel's most popular station, last night.
President-elect Trump tweeted, things will be different at the UN after January 20th. The Israeli government believes the next administration will be much more in tune with their worldview. What do you say to them?
Well, again, the new administration can take its own positions. I think they've already signaled through the person that they've nominated to be ambassador and some of the comments that they've made that they are in some areas more in tune with this Israeli government. With respect to this resolution, it would take a different resolution of the Security Council to reverse it. I think that's highly unlikely.
In this case, Ben Rhodes is right, and I agree with him. It's highly unlikely that there is going to be another resolution or a way to reverse this resolution at the Security Council. For the way the Security Council works is that you have to get everyone to agree and not veto a resolution for it to pass. If one member decides to veto a resolution, it does not pass. And that's what Israel was waiting for the United States to do, as they have done multiple times, and even President Obama has done back in 2011, at vetoing a resolution at the United Nations Security Council similar to this. So if this was ever going to be reversed, you're going to have to get everybody on board. Now, Mr. Trump is coming on board, and you could say that, yes, he would be more pro-Israel at the UN. But good luck getting Russia, good luck getting China to have a pro-Israel stance in the near-term future. Now, for many of those that simply think that what took place on Friday at the UN isn't much of a big deal, this is what Charles Krauthammer had to say. He is an opinion writer for the Washington Post. He's also a Fox News contributor. And here's what he said.
What happened today is that the United States joined the jackals at the UN. That was a phrase used by Pat Moynihan, the great Democratic senator, the former U.S. ambassador, who spoke for the United States standing up in the UN and to resist this kind of disgrace. To give you an idea of how appalling this resolution is, it declares that any Jew who lives in the Jewish quarter of Jerusalem, the Jewish quarter inhabited for 1,000 years, is illegal, breaking international law, essentially an outlaw, can be hauled into the International Criminal Court or into national courts in Europe, which is one of the consequences. The Jewish quarter has been populated by Jews for 1,000 years. In the War of Independence in 1948, the Arabs invaded Israel to wipe it out. They did not succeed, but the Arab Legion succeeded in conquering the Jewish quarter. They expelled all the Jews. They destroyed all the synagogues and all the homes. And for 19 years, no Jew could go there. The Israelis got it back in the Six-Day War. And now it's declared that this is not Jewish territory. Remember, it's called the Jewish Quarter, but it belongs to other people, and any Jew who lives there is an outlaw. That's exactly what we supported. The resolution is explicit in saying settlements in the occupied territories and in East Jerusalem.
So, as he said there, the resolution declares all Jews living in East Jerusalem as illegal squatters. That includes the Jewish Quarter of the Old City, which has the Wailing Wall. That's what this resolution does. And also there, he talked about the International Criminal Court and how Israelis might actually start appearing before that. Israelis that live in this area include called the West Bank today, which has over 500,000 Israelis, most of them, of course, living in and around Jerusalem. Here's another clip. This is from Alan Dershowitz. He's an international lawyer, Harvard Law School professor. This is what he said on CNN on Thursday before the vote took place.
Alan, I spoke with you earlier, and I think you're looking at this question this way. You don't want President Obama to tie the incoming president's hands by making policy changes in the final weeks, but he is still the president. Shouldn't he, if he wants to change policy, shouldn't he be able to do it as
well?
He
can change policy, he can make speeches. What he should not do is change America's policy 40 years at the United Nations. If the Security Council resolution goes through, it completely ties the hand of an incoming president. You can't undo a Security Council resolution. You can't take away a veto. And this Security Council resolution is an invitation to the International Criminal Court to go after Israel. It's an invitation to the BDS movement to start sanctioning Israel. It's a very, very bad resolution.
So I'll just stop him there. That was Alan Dershowitz again talking on CNN on Thursday before the vote actually went through. And he's saying that this is going to open the door for Israelis to be dragged before the International Criminal Court. Well, just yesterday in the Times of Israel, we have this article showing that the Palestinians are already set to do this. This is from the Times of Israel yesterday. I quote, prominent Palestinian journalist and confidant of Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas said Sunday the Palestinians were collecting the names and photographs of hundreds of Israeli Defense Forces soldiers with the intention of bringing them to the International Criminal Court in 2017. Quote, in 2017, we are going to The Hague, said Nessa Lehem, according to Channel 2. I'll continue the quote. We have hundreds of pages of names of IDF soldiers. Every pilot and every officer and every soldier, we have his photo, we have his name, and we're waiting for him at The Hague. So that's just some of the possible outcomes from this resolution. The Palestinian news agency, they had an editorial about this, and they said, quote, if we are successful with just one, it'll be a different world. If we can convict one of these Israelis at The Hague, it's going to be a different world, and it sure would be. Then there is this. This is from the text of the resolution, paragraph 5. It calls on states to distinguish between dealings between Israel proper and the territories. So that means you've got to distinguish, if you're an outside state, between the things that Israel is doing inside the West Bank, Judea and Samaria, and in Israel proper, as they call it. So if you're a business in Israel and you work inside the West Bank employing Palestinians, watch out. The BDS movement is coming after you, and the BDS movement is now backed by the United Nations with America's approval. Obviously, anyone can see that this is an extremely venomous agreement that really does seek to hurt Israel. Now I'm just going to go back to Mr. Alan Dershowitz on CNN.
And there's a big difference between an outgoing president making a speech and changing the policy, which can then be changed by the incoming president, and doing something permanent and irrevocable. And that's why I think Donald Trump did exactly the right thing. He said to the president, you do what you want in the last days of your administration, but don't tie my hands. I actually wrote a piece about this before the election, urging the president not to tie who we then thought would be the new president, Hillary Clinton's hands. And I'm confident, by the way, if Hillary Clinton had been elected, she would have called the president and said, do not tie my hands. This president is acting undemocratically 88 senators have opposed to this, the vast majority of Congress, the vast majority of the American people. This is a parting shot by a frustrated president who thinks more of his own legacy.
So we'll just cut it there. After that, the CNN moderator, as well as the opposing opinion, started to come down on him pretty hard for saying that this was a parting shot, for saying that the president was acting undemocratically here, going against even the will of the American people in doing this, in choosing to not veto this resolution that was clearly going to impact Israel extremely negatively, breaking from about 37 years of precedent by former United States administrations. So obviously this is just a very bad deal for Israel, as we've seen, and it's virtually impossible to be undone. But really, what the most stunning revelation of all over the weekend is that it seems that the United States was actually behind the resolution in the first place. This wasn't a case of a resolution just coming up towards the UN and the United States being there saying, well, let's just veto this, but they were behind it. They were behind it's the way it was written. They were behind the pushing the players to actually bring this, the other people involved, the other nations involved, to the United Nations Security Council. I actually wrote on Twitter yesterday that it seemed this fact, that it seems like the United States was behind it. And I got a response this morning from someone else saying, someone replying to me saying, the United States is not behind it. It's President Obama himself. Now, I had to respond to that man and tell him he was exactly right. He was exactly right that this comes from the very highest office in the land. Now, this isn't something that the United States government would have you believe. They would like you to believe this was just a resolution that came up and the United States decided to there and then vote on it or to not veto it. This is what Ben Rhodes said on Saturday, December 23rd. Again, he's the Deputy National Security Advisor for Strategic Communications. Glowing title, but we just know that he is a close framer of these types of deals. We saw that in the Iran deal. Anyway, he had a press on the record press call with the, on, about this resolution. And this is what he said. He said, and with respect to this resolution, we did not draft this resolution. We did not introduce this resolution. The Egyptians, in partnership with the Palestinians, are the ones who began circulating an earlier draft of the resolution. The Egyptians are the ones who moved it forward yesterday, and we took the position that we did when it was put to a vote. We just simply took a position. We just simply took a position when we did, when there was a vote. There was no involvement by the United States in this resolution. That's what he's saying. Now, we have to remember just off the bat that this is the same man that bragged earlier this year about how he deceived journalists about calling them the blob in an interview with the New York Times. He talked about how the White House was so determined to ram this nuclear deal through without Senate approval, public support, same way they've done this. And they devised and executed an elaborate propaganda campaign to do so. And this, of course, all came to light later, months later. So it's good to remember that this man has a history of lying in these cases to achieve a purpose. So the United States says they're not, they were definitely not working behind the scenes in this. That's what Ben Rhodes says. And he is very close to President Obama, a speechwriter of his as well. Well, then on Sunday, a day later, this is what the spokesman for Israel's Prime Minister, David Keyes, said on CNN.
We have ironclad information, frankly, that the Obama administration really helped push this resolution and helped craft it from sources internationally and from sources in the Arab world. And it's really an unfortunate legacy, a kind of last-minute jab at Israel that actually distances peace. And I applaud leaders of both the Democratic and Republican parties who have come out and blasted this deeply anti-Israel resolution, this resolution that unfairly targets Israel from a body which to say is biased would truly be to understand.
David, let me just stop you right there. You are saying you have ironclad information effectively that the U.S. engaged in collusion with the Palestinians to get this resolution passed. Can you give that to the public? Can you make it public to prove what you're saying is true?
Unfortunately, I can't, not here on CNN, but I can tell you that we have full confidence the information is accurate.
So you can tell there that was David Keyes, the spokesman for Israel's prime minister. You can tell there that the CNN reporter, the journalist, was actually taken back by that bit of information that the United States, according to Israel, from their sources, they say that Israel says that they have ironclad evidence that America was in fact colluding behind the scenes to try and not only get this passed, but actually had a part in framing the resolution itself. Now, earlier this morning, the Jerusalem Center of Public Affairs, a think tank over here, they released this article written by former Ambassador Alan Baker. And he writes this article entitled The Dangers of the UN Security Council Resolution. And one of his paragraphs says, references in the 10th preamble paragraph to the fact that, quote, the status quo is not sustainable, end quote, entrenching a one-state reality, end quote, are new phraseology and would appear to be inspired by or even direct quotes from statements by President Obama, Secretary Kerry, and the Vice President Biden. So even the text of the resolution as well sounds like it was written by the American government. I'm sure that would be debated. But you can Google it, as I did, those phrases, and you'll see that they were used in the past year by the American government bodies more than anyone else. But according to Rhodes, the government didn't have anything to do with its framing. And yet Israel claims that it has proof that they did. This is what Israeli ambassador to the United States, Ron Dermer, said to CNN yesterday, and this was after Rhodes had called, Dermer had called Rhodes a master of fiction on MSNBC, and then he said this to CNN, backing up what Keyes said a day earlier. Now, before I play that, I just should set it up that this is Don Lemon from CNN talking to him, and he just asked a question of why the United States ambassador to Israel was summoned before Netanyahu a day earlier to talk about the resolution.
Merry Christmas and happy Hanukkah to you.
Merry Christmas and happy Hanukkah to you as well. I have to ask you, do you know anything about this meeting yesterday?
With the American ambassador?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just want to say something to Oren. The reason why the only ambassador that the Prime Minister of Israel met with was the American ambassador is that's the only country where we have any expectation to actually stand with us at the United Nations. Look, it's an old story that the United Nations gangs up against Israel. What is new is that the United States did not stand up and oppose that gang up. And what is outrageous is that the United States was actually behind that gang up. I think it was a very sad day and really a shameful chapter in
Ambassador,
U.S.-Israel relations.
What's the evidence that the United States was behind this gang up? I've heard that a lot.
Yeah, we have clear evidence of it. We will present that evidence to the new administration through the appropriate channels. And if they want to share it with the
American people,
they're welcome to. Why not present
it now when this whole
Like I said, we will present the evidence to the new administration, and if they want to share it with the American people, they're welcome to do it.
That was, again, Israel's ambassador to the United States, Ron Dermer, again saying that they have evidence that they will present to the incoming President Donald Trump, and then they can do with it what they want, whether they want to reveal it to the public or not. So Israel's going to let this news fly. Now, considering the ability of this administration to lie while trying to ram through agreements such as this, I tend to believe that the Israelis do have the evidence at hand. Now, when we come back, we're going to look at a couple of instances over the past couple of months that do indicate that the United States president was primed for this move. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. They call it the City of Peace. But it is filled with violence. Yesterday, bloody crusades and sieges. Today, terrorism, rocket attacks, and stabbings. Intense international pressure. But no diplomatic solutions. This is Jerusalem. No city has suffered like it.
Will there ever be peace? God says yes. There will be peace in Jerusalem, and not just for the Jews. It will be a peace that spreads to all people. How will God bring peace to Jerusalem? Request your free copy of Jerusalem in Prophecy to find out. The answer comes straight from your Bible. Peace is coming soon. Act today. Please visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, online at kpcg.fm and over the air in Edmond, Oklahoma on 101.3 FM. I'm Brent Nuchtigall, filling in for Stephen Flurry, and we're speaking about the revelations that the United States not only didn't veto the anti-Israel resolution at the UN on Friday, but they were actually behind its framing. Brett Stevens, he wrote a piece yesterday in the Wall Street Journal entitled Obama's Fitting Finish. And he details some of this interesting history going back into November. And I'd just like to quote, this is about middle of the way through his article, again, from the Wall Street Journal. This is Brett Stevens. The administration, quoting now, the administration was deceptive about the motives for the 2012 Benghazi attack. It was deceptive about Sergeant Bo Bergdahl's service record and the considerations that led to it. Led it to exchange five Taliban leaders for his freedom. It was deceptive when it began the nuclear negotiations with Iran. It was deceptive about the terms of the deal. It continues to be deceptive about the fundamental aim of the agreement, which has less to do with curbing Iran's nuclear ambitions than with aligning Washington's interest with Tehran's. Now the administration is likely being deceptive about last week's UN vote, claiming it did not promote, craft, or orchestrate a resolution that treats the Jewish quarter of Jerusalem's old city as a settlement in illegally occupied territory. Yet, Brett Stevens goes on to write, in November, John Kerry had a long talk on the subject with the Foreign Minister of New Zealand, one of the resolution's sponsors. And now we'll quote the New Zealand Herald from last month. This is what they wrote. One of the closed door discussions between United States Secretary of State John Kerry and the New Zealand government today was a potential resolution by the United Nations Security Council on a two-state solution for the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. That sounds like they had some ideas this was going to happen. They're talking to the nation that ended up coming together to actually propose this, to sponsor this resolution, New Zealand, and they're in conversations with the United States Secretary of State, John Kerry, and the New Zealand Herald is saying that they're potentially going to bring a resolution forward. Sounds like they knew before the day, that sounds like they knew before even a couple of weeks ago that this was going to come forward. And it sounds like the Secretary of State, who answers obviously to the President, was willing to go along with it. The paper then quoted Foreign Minister Murray McCulley. And he said, quote, this is New Zealand's foreign minister, it is a conversation we are engaged in deeply, and we've spent some time talking to Secretary Kerry about where the U.S. might go on this. So this is obviously some evidence that the United States was involved in this process before it actually came to vote. Now, the Israelis claim they have more evidence along these lines, and as we've covered. And he writes, this is Brett Stevens now, if so, it means the administration no longer bothers to lie convincingly. It's not even going to try hard about lying about this or to bother trying to cover it up too deeply. I mean, it's in the New Zealand Herald. Then Brett Stevens here continued in the Wall Street Journal. Even this might be excusable if Mr. Obama at least had the courage of his mistaken convictions, or if his deception were in the service of a worthier end. Instead, we have the spectacle of the U.S. government hiding behind the skirts of the Foreign Minister of New Zealand, along with eminent co-sponsors Venezuela, Malaysia, and Senegal. He's obviously speaking in jest. He continues, in order to embarrass and endanger a democratic ally in a forum where that ally is already isolated and bullied. In the catalogue of low points in American diplomacy, this one ranks high. So that's what the United States was doing a month ago, colluding with New Zealanders about this resolution. Now, if we go back 2 months, if we go back into the time of October, there were already leaks that the United States was planning on doing this, that they wanted a resolution to come forward to the UN about Israel's settlements or other things, and that they were possibly not going to veto that resolution. This is an interview by Mary Kissel from Opinion Journal, again from the Wall Street Journal. She interviewed Jonathan Schanzer. He's the Foundation for Defense of Democracy's vice president. And as far as I can tell, this is where the story broke that America was planning this. Well, President Obama was planning to have such a resolution like this appear at the UN. Take a listen.
We've got a scoop for you here on Opinion Journal. President Obama may be planning to recognize a Palestinian state at the United Nations before he leaves office. Foundation for Defense of Democracy's Vice President Jonathan Schanzer, the author of State of Failure, Yasser Arafat, Mahmoud Abbas, and the Unmaking of the Palestinian State, joins the show with the details. So, Jonathan, what have you learned?
Well, Mary, we've learned that there are about six options right now that the president is considering, from recognizing a Palestinian state to a UN Security Council resolution that details parameters for the peace process, or perhaps, I think, even more likely, a UN Security Council resolution against settlements. If those fail, then we think that there could be a Rose Garden speech or some other parameter speech that the president delivers in the last several months of his presidency. They're also apparently weighing the option of sanctions or at least barring organizations that support settlements through IRS regulations. So as we understand it, there are about six different options all on the table, all punitive measures in the eyes of Obama, perhaps a last chance at score settling with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
And they sound like a menu of options that the president could implement unilaterally without the cooperation of Congress. So, Jonathan, what would this mean for the peace process?
Well, I think, to put it mildly, I think it would upset the Israelis. I think it would probably empower those on the right and perhaps even get in the way of some of the plans that President Obama has for trying to pave the way for the peace process. So I think that that's certainly part of it. The other thing that I think is really worth noting here is that no matter what the president does, it will seem as if Secretary Clinton does win, it will appear as if this was done with her acknowledgement, with her acceptance. And of course, if Mr. Trump wins, this would be a way to sort of trip him up right from the beginning in terms of reestablishing ties with Israel.
So again, that was Jonathan Schanzer talking to Mary Kissel of the Wall Street Journal back in October, and talking about how they had a tip that the president was looking at six different options that he could unilaterally, without Congress, without any type of vote from the American people, take these actions to take against Israel. And really, it's much more than just score settling, I think, with Mr. Netanyahu. While there are a lot of people, a lot of commentators have come out and talked about that, how they've always had a frosty relationship, and he's just taking one final dig at Mr. Netanyahu. Well, really, it's much, 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 much deeper than Mr. Netanyahu when it comes to President Obama's disdain for Israel. And that's something we've talked about on this program. That's something that you can read about on thetrumpet.com. Callum Wood, he wrote a piece that you can read. You really should go back and read it because it's amazingly accurate of what has taken place. It's entitled November 9 and the Onslaught Against Israel. Now, November 9, again, was the American presidential election. And he talks about how that finally, after that time, President Obama, with whoever is the next president, going to be president, his hands are no longer tied to act in a way that is directly against Israel without there being any blowback for his elections or the Democratic presidential election hopes of Ms. Clinton. And Callum Wood writes in that piece of the typical things that could happen. And just as Jonathan Schanzer just said in that quote back from October, he did take the first one on his list. He led an anti-Israel resolution at the UN. Now, is this it? I mean, the president of the United States has another few weeks in office. Is there going to be more actions against Israel before he leaves. There are plenty of indications that there is going to be another one. I want to play a short clip. This, again, was from last night. And this, again, is Ben Rhodes, one of the strategic advisors to President Obama himself, speaking on Channel 2 Israel.
Let me look forward to the next 3.5 weeks still left for the Obama administration. Are we to expect any other initiative? Will, for example, Secretary Kerry attend a summit in Paris 5 days before the inauguration that will bring forth a resolution or set forth any parameters vis-a-vis the Israeli-Palestinian conflict?
Well, I wouldn't describe it as new initiatives. I think what Secretary Kerry will be doing is he will give a speech in which he lays out a comprehensive vision for how we see the conflict being resolved, where we see things in 2016 as we unfortunately conclude our term in office without there being significant progress towards peace.
So as we saw in that quote, or as we heard, watch out, there's more. Senator Kerry is going to give one final speech, and it's possible that that's going to come at the peace conference in Paris right towards the end of, I think it's January 14th or January 15th, just a couple of days before the president leaves office, and there's going to be a speech given that is going to talk about the broad vision, the comprehensive vision of the future as they see it, as this American administration sees it for Israel and the Palestinians. And this has people wondering whether that grand vision is going to be the United States declaration of a Palestinian state. This would be the lasting legacy, the final movement of President Obama before he leaves office. Now, this is significant that he's concentrating his efforts on these last few weeks before he goes for good from the highest office in America. And he's directing his anger towards Israel, And he's directing it in a way that even though he leaves office, the effect of his term in office is going to fully go right into the next one. It's going to be felt. These resolutions aren't going away. If America declares a Palestinian state, watch out. Watch out for the world to jump on board with this. Yes, the next American president will try and walk back those comments. He'll try and maybe sanction other governments around the world, possibly, that try and enact real serious negative policies towards Israel. He can try and do that. And yet, they have America's precedent to go back to now, that America was for this, and you're just another American president. Perhaps the next one will be anti-Israel as well. You can see how this, the situation that is brewing right now, and the legacy of Mr. Obama as far as Israel goes, is going to see Israel isolated. Now, Prime Minister Netanyahu doesn't think so. He thinks that Israel is so involved in nations in the world right now economically that everyone uses a computer and those parts come from Israel, so that they have to do business with Israel. Yet, sadly, what we've seen in the past is that some nations are willing to forego commercial interests if there is a deep dislike. And the United States, its only real, true, powerful friend in the United Nations, has thrown it overboard. This is not what friends do. This is what Prime Minister Netanyahu had to say about the vote.
Over decades, American administrations and Israeli governments have disagreed about settlements. But we agreed that the Security Council was not the place to resolve this issue. We knew that going there would make negotiations harder and drive peace further away. And as I told John Kerry on Thursday, friends don't take friends to the Security Council.
Friends don't take friends to the Security Council. That was Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. And yet, that's exactly what happened. So I would have to say, since this government has taken Israel to the Security Council, are they Israel's friends? I mean, this is something that President Obama said himself that he wouldn't do. Here is a clip from President Obama from where he was speaking before a meeting of the American Israel Public Affairs Committee back in 2012, or APAC. And take a listen to see whether his words from this speech really have matched his actions.
The fact is, my administration's commitment to Israel's security has been unprecedented. Our military and intelligence cooperation has never been closer. Our joint exercises and training have never been more robust. Despite a tough budget environment, our security assistance has increased every single year. And just as we've been there with our security assistance, we've been there through our diplomacy. When the Goldstone Report unfairly singled out Israel for criticism, we challenged it. When Israel was isolated in the aftermath of the flotilla incident, we supported them. When the Durban conference was commemorated, we boycotted it, and we will always reject the notion that Zionism is racism. When one-sided resolutions are brought up at the Human Rights Council, we oppose them. When Israeli diplomats feared for their lives in Cairo, we intervened to save them. When there are efforts to boycott or divest from Israel, we will stand against them. And whenever an effort is made to delegitimize the state of Israel, my administration has opposed them. So there should not be a shred of doubt by now. When the chips are down, I have Israel's back.
Well, you could say that the chips were down. The chips are down. And yet, the United States does not have Israel's back in this case. So what caused the change? Well, it looks like there wasn't really a change of heart, just a change in deeds. And he only acted so viciously in the past, through these resolutions, really, when those moves would no longer affect his ability to lead in the United States. Now, when we come back, we're going to briefly look at some history that really has some very strong parallels to events we have discussed on today's program, especially in light of this Jewish holiday taking place right now in Israel, that of Hanukkah.
You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show.
A turning point in recent history has gone almost entirely overlooked. Since that time, an unseen cause has brought about national and world troubles in unprecedented fashion. Crises are intensifying as never before. In our generation, we are seeing radical changes to culture, family, education, religion, science, finance, politics, international relations. Everything has been affected. You cannot understand events without recognizing this unseen cause. The United States has been shaken in astonishing fashion. Have you wondered why the world's number one superpower is declining so rapidly? Are you concerned about where the current administration is leading this country? The Bible provides penetrating insight into the invisible cause of society's decline. America is prophesied to fall before it rises again. The Bible also gives extraordinary insight into how that fall will come about. This insight puts the seriousness and urgency of current events in their true perspective. Understand what's in store for America and why. Visit thetrumpet.com and click on the Literature tab to request this free, enlightening booklet, America Under Attack.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to The Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Now, before we go, I'm just going to cover a little bit of history here and really try and get you to go forward and read an article from thetrumpet.com that details the historical parallels that we're witnessing for events that took place here 2,000 years ago right here in Israel. Just yesterday, there was a editorial cartoon in the Yediot Aharonot, which is one of the most famous or popular Israeli papers, and it's an editorial cartoon in which Mr. Netanyahu casts President Obama as the new Antiochus, and it's hashtagged Hanukkah. Now, why? Why is that? Well, right now, we are in the middle of Hanukkah. And Hanukkah is this 8-day Jewish holiday that commemorates the rededication of the temple in Jerusalem. But we have to ask the question, why did the temple in Jerusalem need to be rededicated? What happened to it? Well, Antiochus Epiphanes is what happened to it. And Antiochus Epiphanes, as many of you know, he was a famous king of the Seleucid dynasty in the 2nd century BC, one of the kings to come out of Alexander the Great's empire. And he was battling against the Egyptians, or the Ptolemaic empire down in Egypt throughout his rule. And right in the middle of those two nations, or those two kingdoms, were the Jews. Were the Jews, who had, since Alexander the Great's time, at least had a general bit of autonomy. Some autonomy to dictate their own ways that they should live. But really, what we see from history is Antiochus Epiphanes upset by a losing battle in Egypt, or a lost cause in Egypt, comes back through Judea and really takes out an amazing bit of anger out on the Jews. A slaughter, really, of the Jews. One history says that he slaughtered about 40,000 inhabitants, and 40,000 more were enslaved, according to some histories. But he didn't stop there, Antiochus Epiphanes, in his hatred. As he spewed out his hatred upon the Jews, he even spoiled the temple. He took a lot of the vessels, the furniture, the treasures from the temple. He brought them back to Antioch, his capital. He burnt the city. He erected a fort right to the south of the temple, which is even archaeologically being dug up at this day. And he did that so that any worshippers that were approaching the temple would be slain. Then he set up what the book of Daniel says was the abomination of desolation back there inside the temple. Now, at that point, the Jews had fallen far from God in their religion, yet they did revere the temple. And Antiochus, he really hatefully desecrated the temple, spat on the religion of the Jews. But that wasn't enough. He even had decrees that from when he went back up to Antioch, where he tried to really sabotage the entire religion of the Jews. He tried to destroy every copy of the law that could be found. And if a copy of the law, the Bible, was found in your possession, you would be killed. And yet eventually, after a number of years, as Antiochus Epiphanes tried to institute this ethnic cleansing, really, upon the Jews, religious cleansing of the Jews, what happened was there was a revolt, and eventually that revolt led to the taking back of Judea from Antiochus Epiphanes' men, and it led to the rededication of the temple. And that is why Hanukkah is celebrated today. But there was this man, Antiochus, that stood against the Jews, that moved his armies against the Jews. Now, to understand more of that history, its relevance to Hanukkah, and also why it's so relevant to today, the events that we're living through this very week, I'd like to offer you an article to read, or suggest that you read an article. It's entitled by Editor-in-Chief Gerald Flory of The Trumpet Magazine. It's entitled, "What Inspires President Obama's Relationship with Israel?" What inspires President Obama's relationship with Israel? It was written a year ago. It was written in relation to Israeli President Reuven Rivlin and his wife lighting candles on a menorah at the White House with President Obama. And then after that lighting, President Obama going on to acknowledge the history of the Maccabees, the very same history that Danny Dannon, who was Israel's ambassador to the United Nations, the history that he brought up in his speech at the UN just as this resolution was given. The history of Hanukkah, the history of Antiochus Epiphanes, has everything to do with not just this time of year, but with the actions we're seeing right now by the President of the United States of America. Please request or go online, thetrumpet.com, and read this article, "What Inspires President Obama's Relationship with Israel." That brings us about to the end of today's program of the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to send some feedback about the show, you can do that by sending your emails to td@kpcg.fm. Thanks for listening today. I'm Brent Nachtigal once again, coming to you from Jerusalem, Israel. Tomorrow you'll be back with your regular host, Stephen Fleury.